Hello, and welcome to the Conscious Hoofbeat Podcast. This is a podcast that explores the interconnectedness of our health and the health of our horses through self-care, mindfulness, and personal development, along with a little equine wisdom and wellness. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Maynard, the passion-driven equinologist. I have dedicated my life to the horse. Some call me a fanatic, and I claim it, because I'd rather be dead than horseless. I'm a published author and researcher, equine body worker, energy facilitator, and I am passionate about deepening the human-horse experience. Join me here every Monday where I share my spiritual journey with horses, woo-woo horse care practices, and shared lived experiences from horsewomen around the world. Today, I invited international performance horse trainer Jonathan Gauthier to join me for a conversation about inner horsemanship. Although, as we know, us horse crazy people love to talk about horses, so this may stray a little. Heads up. Over the past 20 years, Jonathan's career highlight was building his own foundation, which stemmed from what he learned from his dad, Francois Gauthier. During that time, Jonathan started over 100 young horses, many of which went on to become highlights of his career. Jonathan takes a lot of pride in that and is grateful to his dad for helping him get off to a good start in the horse industry. Jonathan spent 4 years training in Europe. During his first year in France, he competed in almost every European country and held the position as the country's national trainer at the 2006 World Equestrian Games. The next 3 years were spent successfully running his own business near Munich, Germany. In 2010, Jonathan returned to the States. In the same year, he won the NRHA Open Futurity Levels 1, 2, and 3 and placed 12th in the Level 4 Open Futurity Finals, earning over $100,000 in a single year. Jonathan is currently training out of the Great Sterling Ranch in Pilot Point, Texas, where he has made the National Reining Horse Association Finals Futurity and won various levels of the NRHA Open Futurity. He has also co-founded Prospects Unlimited LLC, which specializes in buying and selling reining horse projects. Welcome, Jonathan Gauthier. Thank you so much for taking time out of your training barn schedule to join me today.
Happy to do it. Thank you so much for having me.
I want to know, why did you leave Europe? I want to move to Europe so I can eat cheese and bread and drink wine all the time. So what brought you back? I forgot to ask you that for your bio. What brought you back to the States?
Well, unfortunately, it's a very simple answer. It was citizenship issues. I'm originally from Canada, and so I was on a green card status, permanent resident status here in the US. So technically, you're not allowed to be outside of the US for more than two and a half years within a 5-year period. And I had busted that already. So I really had to come back here and get my citizenship locked in so that I can eventually travel back to Europe, because it was one of the greatest time of my life. And we definitely left Europe with the promise of coming back as soon as possible. So technically we just came back in order to, you know, to get this under control. And my dad at the time, we were coming out of the recession of 2008. And so that hurt a lot of businesses, especially horse businesses. And that left him, a little bit in a bind. So it kind of, I remember my mom, was visiting us in Germany, and we had dinner one night, and she had been over to my dad's, and, although he wasn't saying it, she was telling me that I think that, you know, if you can, it's time to go over there and help out. And so we just then decided, yeah, let's go and do that for a little bit and then come back.
Right on. I thought it was going to be a more exciting story. Good old legalities.
Yeah, no, because, well, it's, you know, one thing leads to another. But obviously, I was having the fun part of the story is, originally, I just sold two horses to a good client in France. And I was supposed to only go there for 2 weeks to ride them with this trainer and give him some pointers on how to keep going with them. And then there was a show coming up in Belgium. So he asked me if I would stay a little longer and go and ride the horses at that show. And then there was another show and one thing led to another where, since I was already there, they asked if I would coach the French team at the World Equestrian Games that happened in Aachen, Germany. And I was like, you know what? I already left. So I feel like nothing is really calling me back to the States right now. So I accepted. So I spent the entire year of 2006 touring around Europe with those two great horses, from Germany to Italy to Mallorca, Spain. And I just had a great time riding those two horses. And then at the World Equestrian Games is where I met my wife. And that led me to stay she's from Germany. So that led me to stay 3 years and run my own business 3 years in Germany. And we had something great going. I loved it there. It really hit me in many ways, though, this 4 years in Germany, because I was riding my horses not the way that we were training, you know, and specifically those two horses there, and whether it was a smaller show in France somewhere or outside, but people would come up to me and say, "We love to sit here and just watch you ride your horses." They were asking me, "Why can't our trainer ride their horses the way that you do? Why did they have to bang them around and run them in the walls and such?" And I'm like, "Well, I kind of know what they're talking about," and I really never really had an answer to that. And then, but I appreciated the compliment. And then in Germany, I had a lot of clients coming up to me and saying, they weren't leaving that horse with me for a month, maybe three, because they all had a story where they bought a horse with a trainer or from the state or whatever, and that horse is now crippled in the pasture. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And I think that the wet industry just really boomed in that period in Europe. So I think many young trainers were under some pressure without really the experience to handle that and putting a lot of pressure on himself. And I think that was often resulting in catastrophic scenarios. And I could not believe how often I heard that. So I just, I remembered at that point in time, making a promise in my mind to make a difference. If anything, I really want to make a difference in this industry, in the reining industry, in changing that mentality where people are afraid to take a horse to a trainer, it was not something I was accustomed to, because I grew up riding out of my dad's ranch. We had always 80 horses in training, and I don't know, we ran a really good business and people were happy and satisfied. And so it's the first time I ever had a client showing up to me with this type of worry. And I just remember, promising myself to do everything in my power to make a difference in that regard in the world. And so after leaving Germany for this unfortunate reason, oftentimes some trainers that had a stint in Europe come back here and to sort of be forgotten in a way. But fortunately I had this great business going. And when I came back that first year, as you mentioned in the introduction, I was very, very successful the first year I came back here. And had my lifetime accomplishment happened that year. So that cemented a great relationship between the market I already had acquired while in Europe, coming back here and really launched my career in the right direction. So although I may, for other reasons, I may not have made the move back to the States, it really, really triggered something big in my career.
So I love your 2 weeks turned into 4 years. You found the love of your life and got married, and you were able to help an industry over there that needed help. That's beautiful. Yeah. Wonderful. I love how everything happens for a reason. I really believe that. In the same way, I believe that your Horse Training Pro YouTube channel kept showing up on my feed for a reason. And I love that even though you are a reigning performance horse trainer, I love that these videos are applicable to just some good old basic horsemanship that I feel is missing a lot of times. And a lot of people don't get that foundation and those fundamentals. So I'm like, I'm loving this. I'm like, I can watch these videos and they're applicable to my dressage horse, my hunter horse, my western riding horse, right? You have to get those basics in before you can even have a reining horse, right? Or any discipline.
Yeah.
And so, but one of them that I watched, you were talking about inner horsemanship. And you said something that really resonated with me. I don't know if you remember saying this about opening your mind to more than just daily training methods and exercises. And so I want to know what does that mean for you when you talk about opening your mind, inner horsemanship? What does that mean for you and your horses and your training program?
Horsemanship for me in one way is a very, very is a very vast term, and it covers so much. And everyone can be a good horseman in its own way. I truly believe that. And but I think that for the most part, is first, I definitely want to treat the horses the way that I want to be treated. And I think that if you start with that, it goes a very long way. And then there are some, you know, some very subtle interactions that you can do with your horses, or that you should do with your horses, that are the same interactions that you would do with anyone else that you respect or love, such as your children, or a friend, or someone you're helping with a task or with doing something, whatever it is. And that's and that type of guidance, that type of education should, that you would apply to your, let's say, your own children or whatever, should be very similar to how we apply it to our horses. Otherwise, they will not feel that mutual respect that I think that is very important to establish very early on in your relationship with horses. So such as if you go into the barn and get this horse to ride, and I've got maybe 10 to ride that day, and so I make my own schedule, and I make my schedule according to, you know, to my needs, without taking under consideration my horse's schedule or needs or preferences. And I think that that's what separates, you know a methodical program with a program that's has a little bit more horsemanship sense to it. So what I try to make my daily training schedule sort of a little bit more according to putting the odds on my side, and making sure that I'm taking the right horse at the right time of the day in order to create as much positive situations and create as much positive energy with each time we ride and with each interactions. And it starts from opening the stall door of my horse. I think that nowadays we have a lot of upcoming riders or people going to fetch their horse in the horse stall while browsing their Facebook timeline, and mm-hmm. and this is to me where a horse, you know, if most horses, almost all horses, they may be eating or they may be chilling with their head in the corner of the stall or whatever, and they're not expecting to be that someone is going to come and grab them to go ride them right there. So I think that it's very important, for example, to make this a mutual decision. So if you open the stall door, you grab the halter and you stand right there, they'll look at you. And obviously they're going to think, you know, they're going to know what you're there for. But if you, instead of just walking in, putting the halter on and taking them out of the stall, if you just stand there for a minute and wait, then generally they will walk up to you. And then it seems like, you know, it's a mutual decision to go and ride that day. And this is how this should start. And these are the type of micro interactions that I think will make a big difference in the end.
Yeah, and it's just those little things, right? Like, how many people are yakking on the phone, walk in, throw the halter on, lead the horse out, going through the motions, and they're not taking that, like, might only be 30 seconds to be present with the horse, mindful to the horse, and have that interaction. I love that. I always say that the barn is my church and the horses are my spiritual practice. And I leave my phone, like when I'm out riding and stuff, I leave my phone in the house or in the tack room. And I really, like, I feel in your work from your videos I've watched and talking to you, I feel like you have like this real reverence for the horse as a more of a sentient being in a sense than just a tool to get the job done and get your paycheck. Like you love horses, don't you?
Absolutely. I treat them as I would like to be treated, and I treat them as my children. And if I was a school teacher or just how I educate my children, I think that I'm all about motivation, and it's whatever can motivate the horses to do this. And again, like I said, creating a positive atmosphere and a teamwork atmosphere with your horses, I think will go a very long way. And that's they're not machines. They're living beings. They have emotions, feelings, and although they're highly forgiving animals, which sometimes I wish they weren't that much. I wish they held a little bit more of a grudge occasionally, but they don't. And some you know, not whatsoever. And so they're very forgiving horses. And I think that sometimes it opens the door for people to neglect to take these things under consideration. But I think it's very important to be aware of that and act accordingly.
Yeah, so how does this mindful approach affect your training program? Like, do you see a difference in your horses maybe compared to other people's approaches to training?
It's a constant struggle to live by in ways that take I'll give you an example with my prospects business, and then that can lead to another pretty good example with Dreamin. Mm-hmm. And to the story with Dreamin's Intentional Town. So for example, my prospects business is starting 2 year olds in the beginning of their 2 year old year and training them until the end of the 2 year old year, which is their prime market value. And this is when people look for their next year's futurity horses. In the 3 year old year, the futurity horse year in my industry is the prime year in the regards that this is where the money's at. I think that this is not right. I think that it should be, I think that we should be looking way more towards longevity. And I think that we are starting to do that. But I really, really wish that it was the other way around. I really wish we weren't putting that much on our horses so early on. And I wish that the big money was later on in their career, more like jumpers.
Like four and 5 year olds instead of 3 year olds,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And we have derby years, which are 4 to 7. We extended just recently from 6 to 7, so 4 to 7. So there are plenty of time, but still, sort of use up a horse in his 3 year old year, then you're a little bit more limited to how much you're going to be able to push that horse in the following year. I really wish that the 2 year old year is elementary school and the 3 year old year would be secondary school or high school, and then after that, okay, we're ready to take on the performance aspect of things. But anyways, unfortunately, this is how this works, and it works okay. But the especially living here in Texas, training those young horses, they're at the part where they're starting to learn the maneuvers. It's the beginning of summer, and summer will be 4 to 5 months in the 90s and sometimes up in the hundreds here in Texas. And so this part, so a lot of people will be pushing pretty hard in that period, which I think is going to be harder, get you more in trouble, be somewhat discouraging to the horses. It's just a little bit, so I try to avoid doing maneuvers in this period and just really train around all of the maneuvers and really work on all of the gymnastics and the exercises that I use and develop into training tools for when I will be ready. And then that to the heavy critic of some of my customers or even my partners, which, would come visit in the month of August to see where how the horses are doing. And others are posting videos on Facebook where the horses are turning big or stopping big and doing big maneuvers. And then they're watching mine and mine are not. And so they're like, hey, we invested in these horses and they're good horses. Why aren't they not doing what they're supposed to? And I always say, because it's too hot right now. And I don't, and it's not a time to overdo it and risk injuring those horses. So instead, I'd rather work their minds and work their bodies and develop them physically and mentally to be really ready to do it. And once they are, and it starts to cool off, then this is when I start to do the maneuvers. And it's sort of fresh the temperatures are easier. It's sort of fresh in their mind and fresh in their body. And when I approach that prime market value, this is when they are in their prime of it. They're not sick of it. They're not tired of it. They haven't overdone it. I haven't gotten into trouble yet. So I think that they do stand out in that way. And that's why that I was very successful in running this business, because I treated them as 2 year olds and they were in their prime in that period, rather than some of the other horses, which had been doing it through the entire months of summer, that they, you could tell they knew how to do the maneuvers, but you could tell that they were at their limit. They were tired of it. That shows to the outside, to a buyer, when you have a horse that instead is in the early stages of it and is happy with himself and happy with and feeling, yeah, just feeling really good physically and mentally. And I think that goes a long way. So this is, for example, how I apply this with my prospects business.
Yeah. So what I hear you saying is goes back to that old saying, fast is slow, slow is fast. You take your time, you do the basics, you get the foundation work on, and then when you're ready to do the maneuvers, it's there. It just comes together, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, that also translates into sometimes less is more. And in this instance, I truly believe in that. And then there's the other approach, which is a little bit more army style, which is just drilling it into the horses repeatedly. And we all agree that consistency is how you train horses, and you've got to do it until it becomes second nature and all that. And I get that, but I do think that sometimes I can't bring myself to train my horses that way. I want to set my horses up for success, and I want to show them what it is they're supposed to do. And I want them to want to do it for me. I don't want them to feel like they have to do it for me. And I think that's what separates me from some of the other programs that are out there. And I think that in some occasions, that may set me apart in a way that, okay, my horses may not feel or be as ready as some others that have just, you know, been overdoing it and doing it and doing it. But I think in the long run, I think this is the more horsemanship, horseman approach.
So what I'm hearing you saying is that inner horsemanship for you is taking the horse into consideration and having a mutual relationship with the horse.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. So let's talk about Dreamin' a little bit. And I asked you early if you would consider him an emotional rehabilitation project, and you agreed. So let's give folks a little bit of background about Dreamin', and we'll talk about him and his situation. And if they want to follow the Dreamin' story, it's on your Horse Training Pro YouTube channel. You already got 3 up now, don't you, about him?
Yep. Got 3 videos. We're shooting actually the 4th video this afternoon. We're heading to the park and we're going to go into some trails.
Okay. So, fun. Well, let's back up and let's talk about, what's his registered name again? Dreamin' Tinseltown? Is that?
Yeah. Dreamin' in Tinseltown.
Dreamin' in Tinseltown. So tell the story. You tell it better than I will, I'm sure.
Well, this horse arrived to me in his early of his 3-year-old year. And it's one of the examples where I think in his 2-year-old year, he's had a lot of training and a lot of pretty intense training. He did the maneuvers over and over again. I know where he's been trained, and he's been trained by great trainers, just a different approach, a different program, more the type of approach that just, drills the maneuvers into the horse. And so knowing that, and I felt that this horse felt very, very broke to me in a sense that that it was really drilled into his mind, but I don't think that he liked his job, and he didn't really feel happy about his job. I don't think his body was feeling very well. I could feel he had some areas of his body that needed some attention, and he was quite arrogant and stressed, and just you know it he didn't enjoy it. He did it because he had to. He didn't do it because he wanted to. And so
he was 3 years old.
Yeah, it was early in his 3-year-old year. And the person who bought him to me, the owner, is a great horseman, is a great man. And he's somebody I respect very much. And so I was going to give it everything I had to find the best home for him at the best price possible, which is the reason he brought him to me. But it did take me a little bit longer because I really felt like I needed to get all that to turned around, and it even to the point where my assistant at the time, it was also a good friend of this owner, and he even called him and said, "Hey, is Jonathan sitting on that horse, or is he? What's he waiting to sell it?" But I kept saying that, you know, I'm gonna sell him when he's ready for me to sell him, and when he's ready for me to sell him is when he's gonna be enjoying his job and feeling great physically and mentally, and that's a process. It's not it's quite a process, but we got there. And we got there and sold them to some great owners, great people from California, and they were working with a trainer that wasn't really experienced with competing with futurity horses, so they wanted me to compete with them as a 3-year-old, and I did that, and we were very successful. But throughout the year, it was funny because, like, I would do my maneuvers and my training, and then when it came to doing, for example, the sliding stop, where you run down it to the other end of the arena, build speed, just say the word "whoa" and ride the stop, and the horse will slide on its hind end and hopefully trot with the front end to balance itself and stop sometimes 50, 60 feet. Mm-hmm. And we've developed this maneuver into something quite impressive, but again, when a horse is really approaching that maneuver with, you know, with the intent of giving it all he has and really trying hard and is not approaching it bracy, protecting himself from potentially being hurt or punished or, you know, afraid of making a mistake and all of these things, mm-hmm. like you say, to the outside, it looks so much better. And to me, it feels great. And so this horse, every time I ran him down, I always, from the first stop on, he always built really good to a really high speed. And when I asked him to stop, he always tried really hard. And so I got into the habit of just getting off of him right then. And I would do that often with my horses, even with my young horses. And then again, to the critic of sometimes my customers or even my wife, she was like, "We're at the futurity, we're at the main event, we're at the big event." And I ran him down once and stopped him, and he tried hard for me, so I got off. And she was like, "Well, you might want to stop him some more because, you know, you're at maturity." And I was like, "Why? I feel like I had to defend myself or to argue this point with everyone around me because I was just doing the strict minimum with him, but I felt like we were in sync, and I felt like he was trying hard for me, and I didn't want to change any of that.
I have to interject because it's like, isn't it interesting? Yeah. Because you're the rider, you know how that horse feels between your legs and your hands. Everybody is giving you external opinions, but you're the one that was feeling him, and he felt good, and you were rewarding him by getting off and ending on a good note, right?
Yeah, it takes, but I think, again, it takes a high level of horsemanship and confidence in your program in order to stick to it.
Yeah, stick to your guns. Yeah.
Stick to your guns. And it took me a lot. It took me a lot to stick to it. And then it really took me a lot to stick to it. And then I'll always remember in the second go round, because it's two go rounds and then a final. So it's not easy. And, the two go round is famous for, you know, separating the ones that are going to be going home or the ones that are going to go in the finals, because there's only going to be 30 horses out of 300, 400 competing that are going to, you know, move on to the finals. So, so that's where the dreams gets crushed. Basically, that, you know, you have hopes until you go into the second go round of curious, very difficult pattern. So I did that pattern. And after the first, it's an 8 maneuver pattern. And after the first 5 maneuvers, I'll always remember in that 5th maneuver, he just tried so hard to a point where I think he was overdoing the maneuver a little bit. And so just my experience and my feel instinctively right then and there told me we were probably going to get a penalty on that maneuver by overspinning. So we were doing a spin, and I think I thought that the way that his position was and the way that he was stepping, it was going to be very hard for me to stop on the dot the way that I needed to. And so I had already kind of made my peace with it, with the fact that, okay, we're going to overspin. But when I asked him to stop, I mean, it felt so incredibly powerful how he made that move to shut down when I asked him, and he totally didn't have to. So I truly felt like the horse there made a choice to really try hard for me right then and there. And this was the best feeling in the world, you know, to really feel like the horse made the decision to, you know, to.
That's
to
the reason we ride. That is the high, yeah. Wasn't it? It was like a high, wasn't it? That feeling.
It's such a high that I actually, I don't think I've ever cried in a long time since I was maybe a young kid, but I cried walking out of the pen because that feeling was so intense. But it also was such a relief because when I heard the score, you know, like so instead of getting maybe a plus half in the maneuver with a minus half penalty, which would have brought me down to a zero, instead, I got no penalties and all judges gave me a plus one in that maneuver. So that brought me to the big finals with this horse. And so that choice changed everything for us. And made such a big difference. And yeah, so for me, that justified everything. Everything, it truly justified everything. And it felt such a relief because of the pressure I felt from what I was saying, is sticking to my guns and not listening to the outside telling me I think I should do more.
Yeah, that's that inner horsemanship. You're listening to your gut, your intuition, and it's about standing in your truth. Like, it's something I preach with my conscious hoofbeat, is like standing in our truth. Like, stop ignoring the obvious and start listening to your horse. That horse was talking to you. It wasn't talking to the people watching, right? You were having that interaction with that horse. That's just beautiful. It makes me a little weepy hearing the story. I know that feeling, that one split second where it's perfect, right? And all that hard work paid off, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It most definitely did. But after that, he was going to go on to his new journey. And then and unfortunately, he wasn't extended. I don't think that he was, from my perspective, I don't think he was extended the same courtesy as he was, when he was in training with me. And then I think that, that he quickly withdrew within himself and just kind of turned back into the same horse that I got.
Yeah, they shut down. They have nervous systems just like we do, and they end up shutting down. That's how they survive. That's how they protect themselves. It's just an innate part of their being.
I always say that there's this thing that I always say is that, you know, in training performance horses, they're not really given a choice. We decided that that's what they were going to be doing. We didn't ask them. So, hey, what do you want to do with your life? Do you want to be a firefighter? Do you want to be a police officer? What do you want to do with your life? You
right.
And then, you know, it was like, no, this is what you're going to be. So they weren't really given a choice in the matter, but I think that they need to be given a reason. And a purpose, and I think that and I think every horse is different, and I think that, again, going back to how I to how I educate my kids, and I think whether my own kids or whether the other kids that I coach, everyone is different, and I think that if you treat your horses the way you would like to be treated, or you treat them the way that you would educate a young person, I think that's the way to do this, and it's all about motivating an individual to do something, to feel good about himself doing something, and then that goes a long way.
Yeah, there's a difference between motivating and just making them go through the motions.
Exactly.
So you had this beautiful ride at the NRHA finals, and then the horse left at the fall of his three-year-old year, correct?
Yeah.
And he's back with you now, and how old is he?
He's seven now, so he was away from me 3 years, and I feel like 3 years is a very long time. And it was, I made a video that went pretty viral on YouTube, and I titled it "The 10 Things Good Trainers Do or Don't Do." Mm-hmm. And this video was just brewing into my mind every time that I would ride this horse, because I could feel the fear in him from making mistakes, and he was just, and so often I was just like, in my mind, I was like, come on, dude, it's me. I'm not going to punish you for this, for doing this. Well, you know, why are you scared now? Or why are you reacting that way? And it was so in him that it just would frustrate the heck out of me inside, you know, and that just kept my brain spinning and spinning and spinning on how his mind was and how he was reacting to things, and it was just not the same horse anymore on many levels. And I may have been a little bit selfish in thinking at the beginning and thinking that he would come around right away, being like, hey, you remember, like, you know, mm-hmm. I'm the good guy here, you know, I feel like, anyways, and hey, you know. And so that's how I treated him, but it took a lot longer for him to come around that I anticipated. And it's not things that maybe were very noticeable to the outside. It's just things that I could feel. And I think that feeling how your horses, feel is a very, very, is the basically the definition of horsemanship, you know, is having that ability to read your horse right and act accordingly or react accordingly. And so I had to apply a lot of that, you know, to him until he finally came around. But although I feel like I've got him turned around to some degree, and we were pretty successful in competing, you know, in competing, I don't think that he could take the pressure of competing at the level I needed him to much longer. I think that he'd had enough pressure in his life. But at the same time, he's such a great horse and he has so much to offer that it was important for me that I didn't want to sell him to another reiner, which would just kind of apply the same pressure on him to trying to get, you know, trying to keep getting these results out of him. I felt that he should put his talents and his qualities to good use. And then I always say that a solid reining foundation in any discipline is very valuable. There's a lot of tools that are very useful, and so reining is, yes, it's a pretty specific discipline as far as doing the maneuvers, you know, to a high enough level to be competitive in the reining arena. But just being able to control your horse's body the way that we are able to with training the reining maneuvers, I think that it's a great asset for any other discipline. And so that's why that I think that that a solid reining horse like him has a great future in many other disciplines. And I think that in the more recreational riding area where people have a horse and they're like, okay, so what am I doing? What am I going to do with this horse? And whether it's just trail riding that they want to do, or they want to do some, you know, some small competitions of just, you know, boxing with cows or doing some trail or horsemanship and such things, or ranch riding, which is a great addition to our industry, to the Western horse industry. So I think that there's a grab, there's a slight gap between the performance horse industry and the recreational riding industry. And I think to bridge this gap is been my number one goal with creating the Comfort Zone Horse Training video series. So I want to bring all of the training methods and techniques that we apply to training a reining horse and use that to create a solid foundation in any other horse, no matter what the intent is. And it's super fun to work these exercises. It's a great feeling when the horses understand them and you have control over their body, and so body control and all that, I think is what everybody wants to be able to do, is ride their horses with the, you know, with the soft neck and and responsive to subtle cues and all that. So, but for that, you don't need to have a reining horse or do reining. You can do any other discipline. So we decided to just transition Dreaming from every time that he's been ridden, he has this reining on his mind to being able to do all of the other stuff. And it's been a great journey. We started with doing some basic maneuvers such as lead changes and loping around or trotting around, extended trot transitions in the pasture, going through the lake. We rode him bareback. We rode him with a bridle. We just doing all kinds of things. And I think that my point with all this is that no matter what I've done with him throughout this year while competing and reining and try to bring him back to how I had him when we were in our peak doing reining, once I started doing this in the last few weeks, oh my God, I've never seen a horse blossom the way that he has. And now his reining maneuvers feel once again like they used to when he was a three-year-old. So, and I wasn't really, I got it done to some degree, but nothing like he's feeling right now that we're doing all of this stuff. And this is the most rewarding thing ever.
Yeah. And it's not just, we see this probably more often than we want to with horses, not just in the reining industry, with similar situations to Dreamin, and it can be prevented, can't it? Like, this Absolutely. Didn't have to happen. And thank God Dreamin had the foundational work done, so you had something to go back to. When I was an apprentice at Almara Arabians 100 years ago, the head trainer there, Lee Bowles, who's actually in his 80s now and still has one horse in training in Tucson, Arizona, he always taught us apprentices, always go back to your basics. If you run into problems, you go back to your basics. And I ended up with a couple horses that were started for dressage, and I just assumed everybody did this, put the basics on these horses, right? And I get these horses and they're like, I'm like, they don't have the basics to go back to. They have all this baggage and all these problems and no basics to go back to. And I love that about your approach to horsemanship and what you're teaching. And it's like, do it right to in the first place, so we don't have these problems down the road. But yeah. But Dreamin is a good example to know that, like, he's not going to end up, as a pasture pony. Right, you were able to bring him back, and you're doing different things. And do you think he'll ever be able to go back into reining, like maybe for like a kid or somebody?
Not? Oh, absolutely. Okay. Oh, yes, absolutely, 100%. It's not that he couldn't do it anymore. Really, it's just that. It's just maybe at the level that I needed him to do it. He's a top performer at the highest level of competition. So, but I think that's right now he's feeling so great that I feel like I could go to a major event and do well on him right now because he's feeling so great. And so, yeah, he's not again really retiring from that per se, but mostly transitioning from it. And it was mostly. It could even be a considered sort of a break or just a change of air,
part of the process, right? Part of the process of you rehabilitating him is exposing him to different things and letting his mind think differently and not be so locked into that old muscle memory of his bad experience.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I want to apply the same approach with, more and more with all of my horses because of the benefit that I feel from a horse like him.
Yeah, so why aren't we doing that more? When I was a youth rider, my background used to be Arabians. And when I was a youth rider, the Arabian industry had this program called the Bonanza Program, and you had to be an amateur. And I couldn't wait till I graduated from high school because I wanted to do the amateur program because you could win money. You didn't win much money as a youth rider, at least I didn't. But you had to have the same horse that was shown trail, western, and hunt seat. and no longer exists now. We don't have that versatile Arabian. And why don't we see that in these breeds anymore, that versatile all-around horse? Why do you think we've got all these niches now?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of, I think that there was a period where these were a little bit left out, but I think with AQH, the Quarter Horse Association, bringing back ranch riding and such, I think that this is coming back. This is coming back alive. And as I said, when I started the Conference on Horse Training video series, I wanted to make it a priority for me to bring this back alive, okay? And so it's a lot more out there than I thought, or that you may think, but I think that we just have to have more horses that are able to do that,
because they're just breeding them to be so specialized, aren't they?
Yeah, it feels like, like I said, that's why I say that I think that there's a gap, because it feels like the horses that I see in the recreational arena, that those people would be able to do smaller events like you just mentioned, their horses are not quite broken off or don't have the tools to do all that. So then they just, you know, stick to the recreational aspect of things, and then it seems like there's a gap to then. All right, well, when you have a performance horse, then it needs to be a different budget, and it seems like it's just a big gap in between. And if we could sort of bridge that gap with bringing these reining horses to to this level, and also give an outlet to the recreational aspect and tools to work on their horses, to self-train their horses, or put them with trainers where they get just broken off, that they have some things that they can do. But there is some out there. It's just people need to know that there's a possibility.
Yeah, it starts with awareness and education, right? Which is what we're doing, making these podcasts, making your videos for your YouTube channel. And then I think the next step is supporting the industry, like supporting the ranch horse riding and participating in some of this other stuff, instead of thinking, oh, I can't do that because, it's so niched or whatever. We need to start supporting those parts of the industry. And even the Arabians now have gone off and done their own ranch horse competitions separate. So we're not alone, but I think we need to educate more people around it and bring awareness to it. It's a first step. So I really acknowledge you for what you're doing and putting yourself out there and standing in your truth. And thank God Dreamin' came back to you. Before we leave, is there anything else you want to add, or some of your best Jonathan Gauthier words of equine wisdom?
Well, I mean, the really is for me, horsemanship and training horses is I see this the same way as I see educating children. I think that every horse is individual, and I think that it's the small things that you do, such as and we'll be addressing that in videos to come, I've seen a lot of videos on how to get, let's say, a horse that's scared of something. How do you get the horse to be okay with doing this thing? And so it's a very, very, it's all about your interactions and how you approach this, and to be able to feel your horse's is your horse's reaction towards something. And so this is what one of the latest videos that I posted was about: pressure release training method. Mm-hmm. And so pressure release is how we basically train the horses. If there is, we apply, whether we apply pressure with our leg, pressure with our hand, or pressure with the halter, pressure with the lead rope, whatever it is we apply pressure, but the the key there is to feel when you meet that point of resistance. And you will often meet a point of resistance in anything that you do, whether it's leading a horse in a trailer, okay? So if you're leading a horse in a trailer, you're having a slight pressure on the lead rope, or, you know, it's very, very slight pressure because the horse is leading and following you. So he's giving to that pressure. So you offer a release and he's executing the cue, which is let's lead that way. But then, oh, he's afraid to get into the trailer. And so at some point you'll feel resistance on the lead rope. Okay. It's the same thing with the horse. When you're asking him to collect his body or give you his shoulders or give you the hip, you may apply leg pressure or hand pressure and feel resistance. How you react to that resistance is going to define how you are as a trainer. So if you can simplify that, if you can simplify that in a way that, let's say that you have your kid with you, your six-year-old son or daughter, and you're walking into a new place that is really scary to them, okay? So then they're following you hand in hand, right? But then all of a sudden you feel that pressure on your hand. Oh, they don't really want to go there. So what are you going to do? Are you going to kind of lead them there, assuring them that it's okay and taking all of the steps possible to really making sure that they understand that it's safe, and then apply a little extra pressure in however way that individual needs that extra pressure in order to give in and trust you enough to say, okay, I'll follow you there. But more very often the reaction I see in rider is gonna be let go of the hand, go behind the kid.
Yep.
That's kick him in and say, get your ass in there.
Perfect analogy. Yes.
You know, and that's so when you feel that point of resistance right then and there, whatever you're asking your horse to do, your reaction to that point of resistance is going to define how you are as a horseman. And so my advice and my word of wisdom, if you will, is going to be that whatever you're asking your horse to do, whether it's coming out of the stall, going in a trailer, or getting off of your leg and hands when training him, or whenever you feel that point of resistance, you need to build the instinct to react to this accordingly, and reacting wrong is what often, you know, will create more anxiety into the horse, more stress, more fear, more resistance, and so that's what I encourage everyone to. And occasionally I will have this horse there and I'm going to the trailer and I have the lead rope there, and occasionally I will have my assistant, you know, give him a good smack on the ass because he's not afraid. He's just, you know, mm-hmm. that resistance. I know for a fact that he's just saying, no, I don't want to. Okay. And well, no, I don't want to is not an option for my kids either. Whenever I'm asking them to do
right,
a chore,
right.
No, I don't want to is not an option. So, but I'm only going to use force or increase the pressure, you know, in a way, only when I know for a fact that the horse, you know, is saying no for no really good legitimate reason, you know. But mm-hmm. I'm always going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
But the horse that you smack on the ass is not the horse that's never been in the trailer before. You've done the
exactly.
work. You've done the work with the horse. That horse has the foundational work. He's learned to give and take to pressure and get on the trailer. And then when you know he's not, he's just like, I don't want to today. That's when they get the smack on the ass. Just to clarify, like, because there's some people that I always say everything's so extreme right now. We always have these extremists that, well, if the horse doesn't want to go in the trailer today, we're just not going to do it today. And I'm like, you know, when I'm hauling horses like across country and I have 700 miles to go today and we're only on day two and we have two more days to go, that's not an option. Like you said, it's not an option when your kid's like, I don't want to go to school today. The kid's got to go to school.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's, I always remember when I was younger, when I was a kid in early high school, the principal took me to his office and he said, you know that you can do whatever you want, right? You can do absolutely whatever you want. You can make the choice to do whatever you want as long as you understand that you have to accept that you accept the consequences. And so that always stuck with me. And I think that also another very important aspect of horsemanship is teaching the horse to make the right choices. Horses instinctively may make wrong choices, and punishing that is not always the answer. and training their brain to make the right choices when, you know, when faced with making a choice, I think is what really represents mutual respect. And mutual respect is, it goes two ways. Is your horse will, your horse with time and repetition of doing, you know, of training with pressure release properly, is that your horse will see you as fair, and therefore, you know, you will always treat your horse fairly, but at the same time, your horse has to respect you as well. So I'm not saying you always have to lead your horse into every situation by the hand. I think that it's just very important to be a good judge of why your horse is making a particular decision at the time, and what's interfering with that choice or that decision. And when you know for a fact that there's no fear or stress or anxiety or uncertainty that is affecting their decision, then or their choice to refuse or to resist, then that's when I think you can be a little bit more encouraging, with tools and whatnot.
Those are some great words of wisdom. And if anybody's looking for some more of your wisdom, where can they find you?
Well, we have our website, horsetrainerpro.com, and just search for the Comfort Zone Horse Training video series. And I think that I'll surface at some point.
Yes, and you have a lot of good stuff just on your regular YouTube channel. I've been really enjoying them. So I'm glad I finally
got... It's been a great journey.
Yes, I finally... I'm glad I got to meet you in person, and like I look forward to maybe someday being able to come to Texas and ride with you. I have a coming 2-year-old.
I would love that. That would be awesome. Yeah, absolutely. That would be great. You know, everyone is welcome to reach out to me for any questions, anything they need, and everyone is welcome to come and ride with me. And I'm open. I'm open. I'm open to help anyone in need.
I love that. That's beautiful. And are you getting ready for the futurity next month?
I am definitely. I've got a very nice horse, and so yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
So where is the futurity held at every year?
Oklahoma City.
So if anybody's in the area and want to come watch you ride and compete, what are the dates?
Yeah, the end of November, the first week of December. And yeah, it's a great facility. There's a lot of vendors, there's a lot of fun stuff to do, so anybody wants to check it out. And our futurity is a fun event to attend in the last four or five days of it.
Awesome. All right, well, thank you again for joining me, Jonathan, and I will put all of your links in the bottom in the show notes for everybody. And again, I want to acknowledge you for standing in your truth and sharing your passion for horses. And until next time, listeners, enjoy your horse.